Hello, everyone. Welcome today to today's Permanente Docs Chat. I'm your host, Alex McDonald, as always. I practice sports medicine and family medicine here in Fontana, California, as part of the Southern California Permanente Medical Group. And today, we are talking about kidney health in honor of National Kidney Month this March. So I am joined by Dr. Leo Provorov, who is the physician leader of KP National Kidney Care Services and the assistant chair of nephrology at the Permanente Medical Group. Welcome. I'm going to call you Leo because I don't want to butcher your last name.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, we're very excited to have this conversation. This is a really important topic regarding kidney health and just raising awareness. If those of us, those of you out there who are joining the webinar live or on LinkedIn Live, especially, shout out to those folks. Please put your questions in the Q&A box there. We'll get to as many as we can. Keep in mind these chats are pretty short, and so we want to keep this kind of high yield. So get those questions in early because we're gonna run out of time otherwise. So let's jump right in here. So Leo, tell us who you are and what you do.
I'm a nephrologist. I'm practicing in Northern California, in Oakland. Been with Kaiser Permanente for almost 20 years. And besides being a practicing nephrologist for the last few years, I serve as the physician leader in National Kidney Care Services. That was one of the first disease-specific national program-wide groups to oversee the very complex care for patients with a chronic kidney disease mm-hmm. from beginning to the end, meaning from the point of recognition of diagnosis through the whole the journey through the different stages of kidney disease, dialysis, transplantation, and the end of life. As you know, the kidney disease is a huge burden on the society, on the patients, on the multiple level. 37 million people in the United States estimated to have some form of kidney disease, and the most striking is that majority of them are not aware of that.
Right.
Almost 90% of those patients not aware that they have it, and they usually know it about it too late. So that's what we do, and we have a small but very interesting team of both physicians and the health plan the administrators who engage in it, and the wonderful groups of people in each market, again, clinical and administrative, to help us.
Great. Yes. So definitely kidneys are a critical organ. And during the month of March, we're going to really try to make sure we raise awareness for National Kidney Month. So you already gave us a little information. So 37 million people have some kind of chronic kidney disease, and most of them don't know about it. Can you share a little bit about not only just that staggering statistic, but also just kind of the burden that this puts on society? Feel free to pontificate if you want.
Sure. thank you for the question. The kidney disease is very unrecognized condition. Again, huge number of people have it. A very small proportion of them actually aware. Majority of kidney disease in coming from diabetes and hypertension. It's a part of recently recognized cardiovascular metabolic kidney syndrome. That was pronounced by American Heart Association. So there is a very intricate connection between obesity, lifestyle, the diet, and diabetes, hypertension, and other chronic kidney chronic conditions. The disease burden is estimated in the hundreds of millions of dollars to the society and the healthcare system. This is not counting to huge burden to the patients themselves. The loss of employment, loss of the wages, just the lifestyle and just pure suffering. As a nephrologist, when I'm talking to the patients and breaking the news, the biggest fear is dialysis. And, this right. is something that completely changes person's life and access to transplantation, kidney transplant, which is that ultimately the best solution to the kidney failure is very much restricted by the number of available organs. Mm-hmm. So the wait times and the suffering. So there's a lot of burden on the society, and I always view kidney disease as a part of this chronic conditions burden that we as an organization and that the healthcare altogether have to solve. It's a multifaceted puzzle, and the chronic kidney disease is just an essential.
Yeah, no, I mean, just as a primary care physician myself, who works both in the hospital and here in the clinic, just seeing these patients and kind of the burden it puts on them, not only just physiologically, but psychologically as well. And so how, obviously, this is an issue which is critically important to nephrologists and primary care physicians are very often the first line in terms of preventing kidney disease, but why should other physicians care about this? What would your message be to other doctors who maybe don't necessarily think about the kidney quite as much as maybe you or I do?
Well, I think everybody should know about the kidney disease, especially if you're a healthcare professional. We see the wide variety of patients passing through in our clinics, hospitals, emergency rooms, and the various settings. And they, just acknowledging that the person have a chronic condition, you know, everybody's more or less aware of diabetes or high blood pressure and trying to address it every time they see those patients. But the kidney disease bring the unique risks to any procedure, any interaction, any surgical procedure, prescription of any medication needs to be adjusted to avoid any potential harm. And they're looking into choice of therapies and decision-making. I think the kidney disease needs to be really factored in into this all complex, holistic approach to the patients. In the past few years, a lot of been talked about diet and lifestyle modifications, and I think that's another opportunity for primary care physicians and any practitioner to just to bring it up as a sort of the unique package that they come in, not just with the pills, but recommendations of lifestyle modifications for the patients with a chronic condition. Yep.
I completely agree. Now you're speaking my language as a preventative medicine, lifestyle medicine physician myself. Well, how do we raise awareness? How do we increase early detection of renal disease? Are there new guidelines or any new screening updates or recommendations which have recently been announced or that are sort of in process at this point?
There are multiple different organizations coming with recommendations. I'm, of course, as a nephrologist, follow only American Society of Nephrology recommendations. And it recommends the screening for the patients in the high-risk groups with the diabetes or hypertension or obesity or smoking or the high-risk factors once a year. The most important modification to screening was addition of albuminuria, urine test for albumin to eGFR, which allows much better prognostication and the risk stratification for the patients with the kidney disease. So I think when you encounter those individuals, those are tests that we should be all making sure that it's done. And if it's chronic kidney disease identified, the patient's appropriately referred or at least informed about those risks that are associated with a kidney disease.
Yeah, I remember when I was in medical school, I would just do kidney function or a creatinine rather, just to monitor kidney function. But obviously, you know, microalbuminuria is a much more sensitive or earlier test to detect that kidney disease much earlier. And we can use that as an opportunity to sort of educate our patients and say, hey, you know what, you already have protein in your urine, you know, I'm worried about your blood pressure and X, Y, and Z. It can really kind of be a motivating factor, kind of get some of those patients engaged, I guess, in their care. Can you list again those kind of patients at highest risk who we should really be doing microalbuminuria screening?
Perspective sort of formal, there is actually now a HEDIS measure, so the quality measure that we all adhere into of a kidney health index or kidney health profile, which includes for the diabetic patients, you need to check microalbuminuria or albuminuria and the GFR every year. And for the patients with any form of chronic condition, diabetes, hypertension, obesity, smoking, vascular disease, cardiovascular disease, those patients, I would strongly recommend for the physicians to check this albuminuria and GFR at least once. And if it's abnormal, follow up and discuss with the patient, refer to appropriate providers, or to multiple educational activities that exist in our system and outside to get more information on what the kidney disease means.
Right. Yeah, it's great. Great information for sure. There's a question here in the chat kind of touching on some of the lifestyle pieces you mentioned. So what are those lifestyle changes or preventative measures that you often recommend for patients to maintain good renal health and preventing kidney disease? Because obviously, you know, prevention is worth a pound of cure, as we all know.
The healthy lifestyle, healthy diet, there are a lot of information coming lately about the benefits of primarily, not I would say vegetarian, but plant-based diet, where the sufficient intake of plant-derived protein versus animal-derived protein is the basis for the diet. There are some very positive keto supplements, the keto diet literature coming up. So, but generally speaking, losing weight, avoiding smoking, avoiding the unhealthy behaviors, making sure that your diet is with appropriate plant the consumption, plant food-based consumption. So those would be probably the most important ones in terms of the lifestyle.
Perfect. That's great advice. I brought lentils for lunch today, by the way, just so everyone knows I'm practicing what I preach. Okay. So another question here in the chat, which is actually a great one. I'm curious to hear about your answer. So how can our healthcare system possibly treat 37 million people with kidney disease? And assuming this number is rising with our aging population and obviously just our chronic disease burden in general. So how can we think about treating these patients individually, but also at a population level over time? Because I imagine that's enough to really place a huge burden on doctors and health hospitals and healthcare systems.
Well, here in Kaiser Permanente, we have a great experience on doing the population management and the providing kind of the broad approach to screening and interventions. We have the programs like PHASE or to identify patients at risk and to at least to educate them and provide them with the treatments that and the counseling that is appropriate for their condition. I think treating 37 million members or patients is a huge undertaking for the society, but it's possible. In the early stages, and that's a majority of the 37 million patients with a chronic kidney disease, it's really discussion about lifestyle modification, making sure that the patients exercise, not gaining weight, have a healthy diet. If there are some modifiable risk factors like, you know, the impaired sugar control, the diabetes, so, you know, elevated blood pressure, to make sure that those are controlled. So majority of those, the disease, early stages of the disease are very preventable, and with the new medications coming up on the market, like SGLT2 inhibitors and GLP-1 agonists and others, there is really now there are the treatment for those early stages of CKD, which can been shown in the literature over and over again that it's possible to not just slow down or stop the progression of kidney disease, or even reverse it. So I think it's possible, but it has to be a concerted effort of the multiple providers. And again, it's a multidisciplinary approach. It's not just one person, primary care physician responsibility. It's everybody's responsibility to take care of it.
Yeah, definitely a team sport, as we always like to say. Medicine is a team sport, and kidney care is no different. Tell us about some, you already mentioned some new treatment guidelines and new medications to slow the progression of kidney disease. Obviously, dialysis, peritoneal, and hemodialysis have been around for quite a long time, and those obviously have their limitations. But tell us about maybe some new or potentially innovative ways to treat kidney disease. I was reading an article last year about a partial, it's not like an implanted kidney, but it's kind of like a mechanical kidney. So people don't have to be hooked up to dialysis. Tell us more about that and you know, creating the next innovation of kidney care.
Well, if we kind of go in downstream towards the patients who are actually unfortunate enough to suffer from the kidney failure and they need some form of kidney replacement therapy, there are lots of new devices coming on, at least in the testing stage of those wearable devices, like you mentioned. So it's the small dialysis machine that is actually like bag size can be carried around. By a prosthetic kidney or implantable kidney is probably a few years, 5 to 10 years away. There are certain issues with this. It's moving forward, but it's not ready for the prime time. There are extremely interesting work in xenotransplantation when the actually the animals, primarily pigs, getting modified, genetically modified to making the organs genetically suitable to be transplanted. So creating pretty much a limited supply of organs available. So there are lots of interesting and fascinating work. I think in the near future, we're still stuck with a sort of old hemodialysis and peritoneal dialysis, unfortunately. Even though the machine's becoming more sophisticated, smaller, patient-friendly, so the interface getting more and more sort of compatible to iPhone versus flip phone, and the just the one of the benefits of the early multidisciplinary like, team approach to patients with kidney disease to prepare them for that transition and to reassure that there is a chance of doing it at home and engaging in the self-care. So there's a lot of home hemodialysis products that are coming on the market already available. So there's a it's a lot. And again, I wanted to emphasize that ultimately the treatment for kidney failure, the best treatment is kidney transplantation, and finding ways how to improve availability of transplanted organs and the access to those organs is one of the biggest challenges that we have.
There's no replacement for an actual native kidney, which is implanted literally. So there's a question in the chat here that might be a little bit controversial. So I want to get your insights on this. So there's a lot of folks who are taking non-steroidal anti-inflammatories pretty regularly for just kind of chronic pain, things like that. Tell us about your thoughts with non-steroidals and kidney health for maybe the healthy patient, somebody with mild stage two, stage three kidney disease. And obviously then someone with renal failure and how NSAIDs can play a role in creating, exacerbating or not renal disease.
Well, it's very well established that chronic use of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory agents is causing kidney damage in this form or another, and especially in the later stages. The question is, there is a lot of nuances in this. I would have to give if I would counsel a patient in my exam room. The simple answer, we should avoid them, especially if it's identified kidney disease, as much as we can. If somebody is so unfortunate, they need to take some pain medication. I think this is would be really the moment to get referral to kidney professional to nephrologist to discuss it and find some alternatives to non-steroidals.
Great. Yeah. No, thank you for clearing that up. And I think it's always an important piece when folks, again, it's important that they know about their renal disease so then they can make sure they don't take medications or other things which may exacerbate that as well. So that's always a great information. So this has been great talk, really good information. Where can physicians learn more? Obviously, there have been some changes and updates regarding early renal disease care and identification. Where can physicians learn more? Where can they get more information so they can make sure they're staying up to date and evidence-based in their care of patients?
There's so many different great resources. In Kaiser Permanente, we have multiple grand rounds. We have internal guidelines published, and the presentations are pretty done on a regular basis. Outside of KP, I think organizations like National Kidney Foundation has an amazing library of materials, both patient-facing and provider-facing, and providing a lot of free and CME kind of the webinars. So I think that's a great resource, National Kidney Foundation, kidney.org, American Society of Nephrology. And now that other organizations like American Heart Association with this cardiovascular metabolic kidney syndrome or definition started providing so very comprehensive materials that put together diabetes, obesity, kidney disease, heart disease, and convoluted connections of those conditions and how to address them, how to treat them, how to make a prognostication, how to communicate it to the patients.
Yeah, absolutely. Multiple facets to address there. So, well, this has been a great discussion. Thank you so much for your time. Last question that I always end with, what makes you most proud to be a Permanente physician?
My colleagues. This unique ability that, you know, for the last few years, I can work with multiple physicians and practitioners in the all regions of Kaiser Permanente. And just to find this is so rewarding to learn about amazing experiences. And I think that they found out that whatever the problem comes up that needs solution, there is always, it's solved somewhere within our system. So it's just, you know, that's what makes me always fascinated and wanted to work and, you know, blessed that I was for the last 20 years, I was in this wonderful group.
Wonderful. Such a great sentiment to end on. Well, thank you so much for your time, for joining us today. We really appreciate all that you do and sharing your insights.
Thank you.
The views expressed in this podcast are those of the speaker and are not meant to represent the views of the Permanente Federation, the Permanente Medical Groups, or Kaiser Permanente.